another FM podcast about sitcoms. I'm your host, Michelle Lykowski, and I'm joined by my husband, who shares my last name, but not my first name. That's Stan Lykowski. And we have Luke Ward, who's married to a woman named Michelle, but is not me. And then we have Dan McNerney, and he is our producer, as well as our friend, and we are here for you. Hi.
Hi. What's funny? I picture Mo in the backyard, and instead of like tossing fly balls in the air to practice catching them, she just says Dan McInerney over and over and over again.
I did that.
You don't have to imagine it. You can just come over and watch it.
I don't want to spoil the bit, but as I've told many people, it's two guys. It's your friends McInerney.
McInerney. Well, I gotta be honest, you reminded me of the tennis pro who's also is his
McEnroe?
Yeah. And so
yes.
No, because Sampras.
Billie Jean Queen. Because of the fact that it's McEnroe,
yes. Or McInerney. Which were you trying to say?
McEnroe. So okay. Because that you said his name, now I'm like, wait, what is his name? And so then I say your name wrong.
Okay.
So instead of correcting your name is infecting other parts of her life.
Yeah.
It's Mac and Ebola. It's infecting.
Oh, which leads me to talk about a show that I like I've seen. And I don't know if we've talked about. And I didn't see it recently because I had to stop because I had to put my eyes over my face. It's called.
She put her eyes over her face.
I'm in my hands over my eyes. Yes, Sesame Street. Really intimate details there. It's the Never Have I Ever, which is,
oh yes, narrated by
John
McEnroe. Does the narration? It's so great. It's so
yeah.
I didn't watch season two.
I think we've talked about it. So I started season two, mm-hmm. and I honestly, there's. There's the classic two guys that she likes are at the place and I don't know why, but it gives me so much anxiety that I was like, I can't watch this now. I don't want to see someone get hurt.
Yeah.
So I had to stop watching that. But the other thing that I wanted to talk about that I've seen weeks ago now, but forgot to mention on the show because it makes me angry that it's called a sitcom.
Whoa.
It's on Apple TV. Mr. Gorman is what I think it's called.
Oh yeah, the Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah, is it good? Bad?
Yeah.
That's a yes or no question.
I don't understand how it's a sitcom. It's.
Is it considered a sitcom?
The expectation is that I will laugh.
Oh.
It's called a sitcom.
Okay, I see.
And I instead. I'm filled with anxiety the entire time.
Okay.
I love this guy, by the way. I think that he is a phenomenal actor. I think he can actually be really funny.
Yeah.
But this show is a guy about a teacher of children who is in his early 30s, I want to say, in LA, and he's just trying to figure it out, and his figuring it out and being a child, a person who is in charge of children.
Okay.
Gives me even more anxiety because, like, I don't want to know about my kids' teachers not having it figured out. I get that we don't. I get that none of us do. But I don't want to know their personal lives being messy.
Got it. Yeah.
Is it good? Probably to a 30-year-old.
Mm.
To me, it's like, don't fuck around with my kids, man.
Oh my goodness.
It's hard now, especially because with the bubble that we're trying to surround ourselves in during the pandemic, to hand off your child, and there's a bit. I know this from personal experience. I mean, I feel like there's a bit of me having to turn a blind eye because if I become super obsessed with everything involved, then I won't sleep for the rest of my life. But then on the flip side, as a parent, you're like, what am I doing? Am I not taking enough precautions and caring enough for my child,
right?
Which is the balance that I'm sure we will have for the rest of our lives.
Mm-hmm. Real quick about that, like, specifically at our school, they had to close a third grade class because of the teacher testing, and none of us were told about it. And it's like, do I, okay, they're taking care of it. So do I need to know? But right, on the other right. hand is, they're
you
only going
to,
I think we should know. I don't know, man.
No, I get it. It's like, I don't want, you know what, I don't want this to turn into the anxiety podcast. So I'm going to change subjects and talk about something that I've watched that I'm enjoying
great.
A lot.
Love it.
Called Only Murders in the Building.
Funny. I started the first episode.
Oh, so good. So good. Very much enjoying it. Very much liking, it is still not entirely sure what it wants to be, but there's a lot of great people working on it. And Steve Martin Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. Selena Gomez, I don't know much about her except that she has Kathleen Turner's voice in a tiny woman's body.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Her voice is very much like this. But to hold her own against Steve Martin and Martin Short, mm-hmm. and she's like a former Disney person.
Justin Bieber.
Well, you know what the funny thing about it is? She's probably the draw to the show, not them. Even though
100%.
The four of us are probably like, oh my God, Steve Martin, Martin Short, but she's probably holding that show up.
I mean, I think they're all drawing in different audiences, but yeah, no, right. And what's great is she's able to keep pace with them. And I'm sure there's a podcast right now with a bunch of like tweens going like, oh my God, these two old guys are able to keep up with Selena Gomez.
Right,
they're
right.
So, you know, but it's a lot of fun. It's really good. And it's Steve Martin plays very, very slow and very chill, which is very rare for Steve Martin, but it's fun to watch. It's, I don't know if you ever saw the movie.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the movie Parenthood?
Oh, I love him in Parenthood.
He's great. And then there's moments in Parenthood where he's not being frenetic, where he's just kind of like watching his kid and watching things. And it's that performance. It's that kind of thing with him, which is very fun to watch. And Martin Short, so good. And his comedic chops, especially, I just watched episode 3, I think, yesterday, and they take some artistic liberties with the show, which is really fun. They do some things that are really interesting and creative, and I don't want to ruin it. So.
Is their apartment twice the size of a New York apartment?
How dare
you? Oh, yeah, but it takes place in a very swankadoo.
Yeah, it does. It's supposed to be very high-end, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Upper
it's
West
like
Side,
the Insomnia.
Right?
Yeah, it's
you know, I lived there for 6 months.
It's one of my favorite buildings.
It's a biography about Yuma.
Thank you.
But this is like, yeah, I mean, like Sting is one of the residents of this building.
Yeah.
Nice.
There's an episode, I haven't watched it yet, but it's called The Sting, and it's about Sting.
That's great. So funny.
Yeah.
That building is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the Ansonia. It takes place actually at the Apthorpe, which is the building from the movie Heartburn. It doesn't matter. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Nora Ephron.
Yeah.
Very early.
But it's very, I mean, their apartments are insane.
And we lived in one of those apartments, and they are that big. The ceilings are 16 feet.
Ugh.
It was insane. That was the first experience I had of New York City.
Oh, my God.
And this is where I lived. And we had a separate kitchen and a separate dining room, and we had 3 bedrooms. It was what is that? Parquet
floors?
Yeah. It was.
Yeah.
In the bathroom and a bathtub. And then we got kicked out because we were very irresponsible. Not me. The other AMDA kids. So nobody was ever allowed to live there again after this one party town. And then we got kicked out and we moved into a fucking hotel.
Yeah.
And it was ugh.
No. Yeah. That sucks.
Anyway, but still anyway. Mad.
Yeah, well, watch this show, and that the high end, like the quality of the apartments, plays into the story as well.
Nice.
It's part of it. It's part of it. So yeah,
Cool. Yeah. Stan, did you watch anything?
Yeah, actually, I watched a documentary called Count Me In, which is a drumming documentary. It's essentially, so mm-hmm. I played drums in high school. I love drums. I'm not as good at them as I wish I was, but like I could keep a beat. But it really like reinvigorated the idea. Man, like, do I get a drum set at like 40 plus years old? And, like, maybe. But it's essentially like interviews with modern drummers like Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers and like bands that you, every band that they that the drummer was from you would know, and they, you know, they
Jeff
sort
Leopard
of
guy
they well died. They do a little bit of like a history of drumming, and him in the cage floating around is definitely part of what they show. And then they all sort of just at the end of the documentary, like I guess like five of the people who talk meet and sort of do like a drum circle but with full drum sets. It was just super cool and made me go like, yeah, man, drumming fucking rocks. Yeah. Like, that's all it was. That was on Netflix if anybody wants to see it. It was really good.
Oh, man, definitely check that out.
Yeah.
Phil Collins? Nice. Is Phil Collins in there?
No, he is not. Sadly, he is not. Really? You know what's funny, though, which I thought, so Ringo Starr is highlighted as like, oh, he was a great drummer. But I always thought he was supposed to be kind of like a weak drummer and that like Paul was supposed to actually be a better drummer than him. But
I've heard mixed, you know, there's that famous Quincy Jones interview where Quincy Jones just like tells all about like who killed JFK and how
in,
he did.
It's like in Variety or Vanity Fair.
Yeah.
I mean,
but he talks about how shitty a drum player Ringo Starr was, but mostly because they were just high as kites and like he had to go in and have somebody do the drums over.
Well, do you know the thing? And first of all, the footage they show is like probably before they got high as kites, like they're wearing those suits with the top, like very back. If you watch Ringo Starr, like he's not just playing, he's sort of dancing while he's playing, and it's like that's really hard to do. Like he's performing for you, and it's like I never thought about that of him. He's actually kind of the most active of the four of them.
Right. There's a. I mean, I think. Oh, sorry. I was gonna say famously Ringo. I think because he was the only guy who had been established before the Beatles. Mm-hmm. He was like a well-known like session drummer in that area. And so that was the idea, is that when they were decided to get serious, they decided to get a real drummer who was Ringo Starr. I think weirdly they all sort of surpassed him.
Yeah, I think so.
Like he kind of stayed where he was, which was a very, very, very good, very competent professional drummer. And I think they were like, oh, we're just going to reinvent music for a generation. And so he sort of seemed lesser than in that. But I think he's a very, very good drummer.
Yeah,
just,
yeah, that makes
sense. He just happened to be in a band with fucking Paul McCartney and John Lennon and George Harrison.
Right.
So
that really, that tracks. That makes sense.
Yeah. So
I have a song about a submarine.
wait, there's a garden, but guess what's in it?
I don't know if it's from this movie, but there's a great clip of Dave Grohl talking to Pharrell about drumming.
No, it's not.
Well, Dave Grohl starts off by saying that he considers himself a shitty drummer and that he just likes to like, he just taps. He just beats his hands a lot. But he just fidgets. And so that's influences his drumming. But also the clip, which is great, is about how he didn't know what to do when he was a drummer for Nirvana. And so he stole the drums from Disco.
Yeah,
and the beats are very disc. I forget what song it is. It's like the OJs
it's a song by the Gap Band.
The Gap Band. Thank you. Yes. Yeah.
But it's one of those things where like they play the beat, and you would, at least for me, you would have never noticed it because it's like, oh, this is a disco song.
Yep. Right.
And then obviously Nirvana is like punk and grunge and all that stuff. But then they play it. They play the beat.
Yep.
In the Gap Band song, and then they play the start of Nevermind, and you're like, oh my God. I mean, I Smells Like Teen Spirit, and you're like, oh my God, it's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
He totally just ripped it straight off. Yeah. It's incredible. And like, it's awesome.
Yeah. That song, by the way, is highlighted as part of the history. It Smells Like Teen Spirit video, and
oh,
him
really?
Bashing the shit out of the drums was part of it.
Yes. But it is, and then he says that he's like, years later, I was at a barbecue with the Gap, like the guys from the Gap Band. I can't remember their name. And he's like, hey, man.
I love him walking up with like coleslaw.
Yeah. And he's just like, hey, what, you know, biscuit? No. And he's just like, hey, I just want you to know that like you were a huge influence. And the guy just goes, I know.
Oh, man.
Oh, shit.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. All right. Well,
wait. What did you watch?
What's up? I really don't have anything. So, let's jump right into it. Cause what I did watch was, Party Down.
Oh my God.
This is, we're going through AV Club's top 25 sitcom episodes of the last 25 years from 1990 to 2015. And this is their number 9 episode, which was an episode of Party Down called Steve Guttenberg's Birthday. Season 2, Episode 5, written by John Enbon and Dan Etheridge, directed by Brian Gordon. Original air date, March 21st, 2010. At his own uncanceled birthday party, Steve Guttenberg volunteers to turn his party into a writing workshop. And that's the premise. And the AV Club said, a classic workplace comedy, Party Down's Hollywood setting heightens the universal desire to be doing anything but your job, since everyone toiling at Party Down Catering would rather be in show business. Guttenberg's relentless, slightly clueless positivity throughout is thoroughly delightful, and the setup gives everyone a chance to shine, like when Ken Marino's Ron takes typically disastrous steps to try and fix the Goot's priceless iceberg water art. When Henry and Casey channel their romantic tension through their parts in Roman script, it's a revelation, with Adam Scott and Lizzie Kaplan both revealing why their characters' Hollywood dreams aren't so far-fetched after all. Thoughts?
Oh, I love it so much.
It's so good. I there's so much greatness to it. And what we're getting into, which is tough here, is the reveals when you see them live versus having to watch them again. I remember watching this episode, and I came to the party late because it was on Stars, and like, who has stars?
Yeah.
But then it was on Netflix for a while, and I watched it, and or like on demand or something, and I fell in love with this show. It was so good. Because for me, it was like the first indie TV show I'd ever heard of.
That's a good descriptor.
The fact that it's from 2010 is shocking.
Well,
the thing that's funny is because it was on Stars, like you said, and I believe I watched this show on Netflix through DVDs. I believe DVDs
that,
in the
I
mail.
I think that's how I watched
and
it
watched
too.
The whole series. So yeah,
it's so great. And so when Steve Guttenberg came on, and you know, we're all of the age where we remember
the
like Guttenberg Mania,
Police Academy movies, Three Men and a Baby.
Yeah, all of it. Yeah. You know, so to have him come back and still like have money but not work, and just to be such a force, and you know, not play. I don't think that he played like a cartoon version of himself or a heightened version of himself. I feel like it was a legit version of himself, you know, like we talked about, like with Larry Sanders, how people would play asshole versions of themselves, and it could be easy for Steve Guttenberg to play an asshole, but also like a heightened cartoon positive version of himself.
Oh, that's
and I felt like
too.
It was more of a like
grounded,
I mean like there is one part where he says like, oh, you know, the time of my life where like I was struggling to make money and just doing art for art's sake was the best time of my life. And someone's like, well, what about like now with all your money and stuff? And he's like, that's good too.
Yeah.
You know. I think he said that part's better or something that.
Yeah.
And that guy, the blonde guy, is
Ryan Hansen.
Oh my God.
From Veronica Mars.
I love him so. Why is he not bigger? Anyway,
I mean, he's been in a bunch of stuff. He's like the go-to guy whenever Kristen Bell is in a show.
He was in what that television show?
Veronica Mars.
No, but the one that she just did.
The Good Place.
The Good Place. He wasn't in that.
Oh, that's true. That's true. No,
so don't ever say don't.
Oh boy.
Sorry.
I loved the show. I think it's pound for pound probably got one of the best casts you're ever gonna
ever
get. You know, like honestly. And it's interesting because there's no overbearing person. There's no A-lister. And I know we know the guy from Parks and Rec is meant to be the star, but like even his performance is just subtle, right? Like it's not like it's the blank show. You know what I mean? Like Just Shoot Me is the David Spade show. Like, you know,
right.
And he, if I remember right, I mean, he had done some great stuff and he had some success, but he, you know, this is Adam Scott pre Parks and Rec, where he was just like, I feel like everybody was like, this is this guy who's very talented and no one's giving him great roles. Let's give him a great role, you know? And the behind the scenes crew too is, I mean, it's Paul Rudd is one of the creators. What's his name? Veronica, the guy who did Veronica Mars is one of the main creators who shares his name with the guy from
Sex in the City.
No.
No, it's Rob Thomas.
Rob Thomas, yes.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Also the name of the
Matchbox
guy from,
20.
Yeah.
Matchbox 20, yes.
Because it's every time I see it. Every time.
I
like.
Well, I still do the Christopher Lloyd thing, even though Dan cleared that up years ago.
Yeah.
The thing about this episode, and this is, it's so good and it's so funny, but where I struggle just in terms of no. I don't get me wrong. I'm not bashing the show in any way, but where I struggle in terms of how do we rank this? And I know I'm hopping ahead. I know we have a lot to talk about prior.
You're dead on, because I'm in the same boat.
The best part of the show was the guest star. Like to me, Steve Guttenberg is the engine of this episode. And
he's incredible.
I agree that this is a struggle, but I disagree why. I mean, for me, it's you have to be invested in what's happening throughout the whole series. So as a standalone episode, for me, it's tough.
Because, I agree with that too.
You know, Ken Marino's struggle is highlighted here, and I had completely forgotten about it. And so it was like, I mean, it's a great bit that he's like coming out of AA, but when I remember watching the show, I remember like his whole arc was great. And then, you know, the same thing with Adam Scott's arc. This is like a big part of his arc. And the same thing with their relationship. And so as a one-off episode, I mean, you're right in that Guttenberg is the engine, but I think he's more of like a catalyst to kind of get their arcs moving around and things.
He's like a foil.
Well,
in a lot of ways, yeah.
The other thing, and I sort of think this might sort of reinforce what Luke is saying, is like their relationship. I know that it's supposed to be a big deal that she kisses him, and you sort of don't pick up that that's supposed to be a big deal. Like, you're just like, oh, she kissed him, she shouldn't have kissed him. But this show to me is like a slacker sitcom, so the stakes are never truly high. Because everybody is just at the end of the day, meh, you know? And I don't say that as a negative. I'm just saying that, like, you never see Adam Scott passionately care about acting unless I've missed some episodes.
Well, if I recall, I mean, again, this goes to that thing of, like, I think you have to invest in the sitcom as a whole versus a one-off episode. And the thing is, I do remember this episode being so great because watching the show and following along with the arc, this episode does give all those arcs a shot in the arm.
Right.
It gives, you know,
Martin Starr's writing.
Yep. And Adam Scott's character Adam Scott's character, like, just wants to stay in the game, you know, or doesn't want to stay in the game and is tired. He's just tired. You know, he had success as like a spokesman for a beer. And then the whole show is about him kind of getting a little bit closer to getting some success and then having it taken away and getting closer and having it taken away. I mean, there's an episode where, you know, like the first episode is where he gets recognized and he's like, fuck, I didn't want to be recognized. I just want to work. And then I think a few episodes later, or maybe later in the next season, like there's an episode where they're catering a bar mitzvah and it's I think it's like J.K. Simmons's daughter and somebody there is a famous actor who's buddies with Adam Scott. And he's like, hey, listen, let's have you audition with this guy right now and do some lines. And he's like, okay. And he gets the spark again. And for whatever reason, something just like falls through and it doesn't happen. And so by this point, he's just like, you know what? I am exhausted. I can't do this anymore, but he has talent. And I think that's,
well,
you know, that's what's showcased in this episode is his talent.
Right. And they'll
really
the second-
see it.
And Guttenberg says to him, I think it's what you're saying is perfectly encapsulated. He goes, hey, man, when I see talented guys, not 9 times out of 10, if you don't give up, you make it. And he says, what about the 10th guy? Because
I don't want to be the 10th guy.
But that's exactly who he is, right? Yeah, like, it didn't pan out for him.
Well, but
the other thing with, I mean, like, what Gutenberg is saying is, like, it's not over yet.
Right.
Right. But what is he hearing versus what Gutenberg is saying?
As somebody who has similarly and not, you know, gotten so close so many times, that breakthrough is, I get it. Yeah. And you just reach for the job that's there instead of try, because you put your heart so, you don't need my life story, but like your heart gets so broken so many times.
Yes,
it's
yes.
just.
Right.
I don't know if you remember the final episode, but
I'm going to revisit this actually probably today.
Yeah.
I love the whole thing.
It was so good. But spoiler alert.
Turn off your radio.
I love how spoiler alert is because
your radio. Are we on the radio? Yeah.
Shut up.
Turn off your ham radio. Breaker. But the final episode is him just finally being like, no, it's worth it. I need to act. This is what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
And he goes to audition, and it's him in a room with 30 guys that look just like him. And that's it. And he stays and he does it. And it's shit, man. I mean, I'm with you, Stan. Like, I don't know where to rank this because this show is brilliant. But like, can you, you know, it's like, is this one segment of this show so much better than one segments of other things?
Right.
You know, like,
I agree.
We just did Friends last week, but like, that's a great one-off episode where the stakes are within, you know, that show.
The game is within the episode.
It's not a bottle episode per se, but it is within.
It's an excellent example of their game, right? Like, that's what Friends is. It's like, it's the best version of their game. This, it feels like you're rating a chapter out of a book.
Right. And so how do we say that this chapter is I don't want our listener to to walk away. Hi, Michelle. I don't want our listener to walk away thinking like we don't like this episode or don't.
No, I think Party Down is probably a cult favorite of the four of us.
Week, Stan said to Dan, "Well, tell me again the title of this thing. It's AV Club's 25 best." Episodes of a sitcom,
right?
And that's
the best
it's such a good part of this series, though, right? Like, I remember watching it and being like, oh man, that was so good, because it just, you know, there's so much great stuff in it too. I mean, like,
there's so much fun.
Well, the one thing I just want to say was I have seen the what if we have a guest star on the show and he or she plays themselves and they turn out to be a huge asshole.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that is done dozens of times. And such a funny, great idea to be like, what if we get Steve Gutenberg? He's on the show and he's just a relentlessly nice guy.
Yep.
Like, that's his bit. Yep. He's like, he's a little dopey, but otherwise he's just like endlessly positive. And it's just such a great, like, and I think I mentioned this last time, but like, I had a negative, I mean, not overly negative, but a negative view of Steve Gutenberg before this episode originally aired. And then when I watched it, I was just like, I think I really like Steve Gutenberg.
Yeah.
He is so funny and so willing to be like, what if I'm just like kind of a Hollywood doofus? Because one thing is, well, just that last bit where he's like, 9 times out of 10, you know, if you're talented enough, you'll make it. And he says, what about the 10th guy? Like, that is a thought I've had many times where it's like some rich and famous person is like, I just believed in myself and you can too. And it's like, yeah, because you're fucking Steve Gutenberg.
Right.
But like, you never talk to the guy who failed.
Right.
And be like, what did you do?
Oh,
you
know what I mean?
Like,
I
it's
disagree.
Always the guy who's rich and famous.
I've seen
who tells you to just believe in yourself.
We've all seen the 10th guy.
He's an acting teacher.
He's an improv coach.
He's in an improv class.
Yeah.
He's that guy in the back who just making bad jokes like that. I go to sleep waking up with my face on his body. You know, like, that's my nightmare. It's interesting though. Like, just real quick, I just want to say about Gutenberg. You know what I do love about this episode is like, yes, you're absolutely right. Gutenberg is like, you know, it's like, fuck you. You did it. You somehow got the winning lottery ticket and you're acting as if you made your worked your way up. But he also has great advice, like for Martin, where he just doesn't let Martin Starr, when he doesn't let the writer stop working because he's afraid.
Right.
You know, that whole sequence I really love, because he's just like, that's just fear talking. Do this thing. You are a writer. Do this, do this, do this. And especially to like Martin Starr, who's started, I feel like, one character type and Freaks and Geeks and has become now this like jaded character. Like we see him do this in Silicon Valley and here, where he's just very jaded. To see him walk out of that episode and be like, I learned a lot. It was so great.
Yeah.
I have two bits of Steve Guttenberg info to drop on Dan that might make you like him even more.
Oh, okay. Good.
Steve Guttenberg was in the 1980 movie Can't Stop the Music, which was, it was another documentary I watched fairly recently. It was about the producer of Grease. And then right after Grease was a rocket burner. You're holding a finger.
Yeah, Can't Stop the Music, isn't that the movie of like
the village people?
Yeah, it's not a documentary. It's
no fictionalized... I watched a documentary about the producer of Grease and the producer of Can't Stop the Music.
I thought you were
music.
Saying Can't Stop the Music was a documentary, because
no.
fictionalized account of how the village people came
it
to
is
be.
So what happened was, the guy who produced Grease, and I really feel badly that I can't remember the name because the documentary is completely about him, Grease shot off to such stratospheric success that he was given a blank check to do whatever he wanted next. And the next thing he did was Can't Stop the Music, which was a bomb by all parameters where this movie sucked. Steve Guttenberg was in it and said, like, yeah, what? Because they interviewed him for it. And he's like, yep, we were touring it. And then I started to notice, like, with each junket, we had less people appearing. And I was literally the last guy still going on tours. And I was like, all right, you know what? That's kind of cool that you didn't give up on it. That's my first little nugget for you. And my second little nugget is, our friend Carl Arnheiter knows Steve Guttenberg. They're actually buddies. And Carl says he's like the nicest dude in real life. That's it.
I have a third thing about Steve Guttenberg.
I have a thing about Can't Stop the Music. I just want you to know it is because of that movie, the Razzies exist.
Oh, it was invented for that?
Yeah.
That's fascinating and depressing.
Yeah, you guys should check out like a clip or two of it. Wow.
Yeah.
There's a really good episode of How Did This Get Made that's available with Pete Holmes. As a guest star and Rhea Butcher.
I love Pete Holmes so much. He's such a nice guy.
It's a great live episode. It's so good.
So my third is, Steve Guttenberg was not involved in the Bible.
Okay.
The Guttenberg Bible?
Yeah. But he was. Yeah. There's a great clip online. Oh my God, guys. This is tangential. The guys that wrote Beetlejuice the Musical, Anthony King, and I can't remember his partner's name.
Scott. I want to say Scott Brown, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. But they wrote a musical called Gutenberg the Musical, and they were able to shoot
a
promo video with Steve Guttenberg.
Nice.
And it's really funny. Go check it out online.
Wasn't it in the village, the West Village?
Yeah,
There also seems like the famous person who then is less famous. And there's always sort of a question of like, well, what happened? Because Steve Guttenberg obviously was red hot at one point and then was less so. And I think there is a small subset of people who are just kind of like I saw like a behind the music with Huey Lewis many years ago, but he was seemed like a really nice guy. He was just like, yeah, we were really popular and then we were less popular. And man, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it was fun while it lasted. And I feel like, I mean, obviously like Steve Guttenberg has that attitude in the show. How much is real and how much is not, I don't know. But that just seems, he's just like, yeah, it was great. You know, I was famous. And then, I guess people didn't like me so much. So I'll just hang out here at my Hollywood mansion. Yeah. Like, I'm not,
wouldn't
you know.
Wouldn't it be great if that was actually his Hollywood mansion, too? Like, that would just be a
lovely
little.
I wouldn't
little...
be surprised if it was.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. My single hugest laugh out loud was the guy trying to have sex with the porcupine painting.
Oh my God!
Oh, and the woman that gets brought along, I think she said she works at the airport, and she's like, he wants to fuck the porcupine, but he can't because it's pointy.
Right. That's good. I mean, there was, to get back to the episode, like there is the, I love the Steve Guttenberg line where he's like, you know, he's like, it's hard sci-fi. He's like, can sci-fi have art? That has a one-word answer. Cocoon.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, such a great. That was great. And I love the subplot of Ken Marino's character is an AA, and he's like he has all the like wine and stuff, so he calls his sponsor, and then you find out he called his sponsor not because he's worried about drinking, because his sponsor's a plumber, and he like fucked up the plumbing system in the fish
Who
tank or whatever.
Who is that guy, and by that the way?
Such a great joke. Know.
He looks familiar to us.
Yeah.
And
but that was such a great bit where it's like,
because
I just forgot about that. And then when he's like, no, I don't have a problem with drinking. I need you to fix this pump.
Yeah.
And he's like, you can't call your AA sponsor to help you with other
things.
Well,
and actually he falls off
really
the wagon
funny.
Because he came to
right.
help.
Yes.
And it's the best line in the world.
And then the sponsor calls his sponsor.
and he's just so like, funny. I'm sorry, the door was open. It's like Steve Guttenberg's front door was just open.
And just a simple thing where the setup for the audience is that the Party Down catering shows up, and Steve Guttenberg's like, oh, I had a party, but I canceled it, and I forgot to cancel you guys. That's my fault. He's like, you have all the food. You have all the wine. Come on in my house, you random people I've never before, and let's have a party.
Yeah.
For my birthday, which is such a funny setup, but something that you could imagine like a millionaire is just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I've already
come
paid
on in.
For
like,
it.
It's totally fine. Yeah, who cares? Like, come on
I don't
want to
waste the food.
Yeah.
With such a funny idea. It's great.
I love, just to piggyback on the Ken Marino thing, the last thing he says is like, oh man, I'm sorry you got kicked out of AA. We also, real quick, I just want to talk about Megan Mullally in this. She plays, she and Nick Offerman too, like they do like grounded cartoon characters, because she plays a stage mom essentially to the daughter. Yeah. I forget what her name is. It's like Escapade, I think.
I think she said Escapade. Yeah.
This is her daughter, who also, this poor girl, I mean, I think if I remember right, the girl just doesn't want to do that, and the mom is just like,
even better.
It's in her, you know, but they do a really great thing, you know, and this hurts me to say this, because we're all aspiring artists and comedians and writers and things,
right?
But she does a great thing where she acts like she's the only one to have this thing.
Yes.
And yet she's a dime a dozen. You know, she's just like, hey,
right.
Steve, I need to talk to you about how to get my daughter to work.
Yeah.
But doesn't do it in a way that's too dance mommy. It's just kind of a like, yeah, this is, I need to do this thing for Escapade. And it's just,
you know,
it's a weird groundedness.
Yes.
Of right. eccentricness.
Yeah.
It's funny as we talk about this, and I think back to when we were talking about Friends, this is a really dense show. Like, Friends had a bunch of quiz questions that were funny and I loved, but there's so many, everybody's got a real story going on here. Like, it's a
like
lot.
The Ryan guy with his trying to bag the girl. Bag? Is that an expression about having sexual encounters?
He's trying to tap that ass, I believe.
Said that, yeah.
Yeah, and just the Ayn Rand, like trying to be
Ayn Rand.
Yeah. Tell me something smart.
Is that a cheese? His backstory is just like, it is that guy that we all equate with trying to be famous, but he's also, there's something more to him that's...
Yeah.
I can't even articulate. But all of the characters, and the guy who played McMuffin,
McLovin.
McLovin.
You're thinking of the McDonald's movie.
The guy who played McMuffin. I'm sorry, that's kind of good.
Anyway, each of them have a backstory, and you know that it's there, and it's so great. Like, it just...
Yeah.
It's so, but like with Friends that we talked about last week, is that they took three seasons to get to where they are, where we saw them. This one is it season one? It's the last episode of season one, I want to say.
No, I think it's season two.
Yeah.
Because I think Megan Mullally doesn't come on until season two. She replaces Jane Lynch.
Oh,
right.
Who went on to be on Glee.
Yeah.
I've seen that show too. Mm. Anyway, I don't know where my tangent was going. Just that they're so grounded. There's such a good backstory. There's so much history that either the actors or the writers put in before it even came to us. And I appreciate that so much.
Well, I think, and there's a reality too in this, which is for all of us who have pursued artistic concerns is it's really tough. It certainly exists, but it's there's for this sort of thing, there's not a middle class, right?
Yeah.
If you are not a big famous actor,
you are
end
poor
up
as fuck.
Working these like cater waiter jobs or whatever. Like, it's really hard. And there's even people who do hit it big, and Adam Scott's character did, momentarily at least. Yep. He was on a famous commercial. But like, if you don't get that next job right. and the money runs out, yeah. like, what do you do? And like, it is almost like a pretty kind of brutal, sad, like, reality that the show confronts.
It's, you know? It's funny because,
sorry, I have to go kill myself. I'll be back.
I know, I'm sorry. Actually.
We need you back in 30.
Yeah, cool.
Michelle and I watch The Office endlessly. That's no surprise to anybody. But I said to her just recently, because everybody's always analyzing what makes The Office something you want to watch, and a big answer that I often hear is, oh, everybody knows somebody like that. And I said to Michelle, I don't really know anybody like The Office characters. I enjoy them, but I don't really work with anybody. Maybe Angela a little bit. I know Martin Starr. I know these people on this show. Like, oh. We've done shows with these people.
Right.
Well, I think what they did with The Office and with this, which is, it feels like they threw up so much backstory because they had, like, I feel like every single person from actors to writers to producers were like, holy shit, I know, okay, yeah. I know this yeah. guy. I know this guy. I'm going to add this, and this. I know his thing. I knew a guy who did this. And I think they did something like that in The Office where it was like, okay, I've worked with somebody who was kind of like this, so I'm going to add this little element yeah. to it and blah, blah, blah. There is more of a grounded reality because, you know, there's that broken rule where they say, like, never do a show or a movie about the entertainment industry because it feels too much like inside baseball.
Yeah.
But they did the, like you said, Dan, the lower class of it, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that thing of just, like, why am I doing this? And it's art, you know?
And you could see the Karen, her name is not Karen, Megan Mullally's character's apartment just from the descriptor.
Yes.
Of living across from a woman who works at the airport.
Yep. Yep.
You know that apartment. Like, yep. You can, like, the walls are very thin.
Yep.
A hamster could eat its way into it and
yep.
get lost,
yep.
which happened to me. I am not the hamster, though. We had the hamster. But, like, just, like, the nuance. I can't make this beat the Friends episode, right. which, spoiler alert. However, it might. It has to be in a sitcom that we do address when we get back into.
Yeah, I'm with you, Mo, and not to jump ahead, but I think I have to stay with Friends.
But I hate mm-hmm. doing it.
Yeah, I mean, like, Friends is like a series of comic books, and it's like, here's this great episode, here's this great comic book. And Party Down is one giant book, and we've just seen a chapter of it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's a steel Stan's yeah. metaphor. So to say Elizabeth on its own doesn't work for me, so...
Yeah, and I don't even... I'm going to do the same, and I'm going to keep Friends at the top. The way I justify it is, for the list that we have and the rules that we have, Friends wins. If we had to do a different list where it's like, what's the better show...
Yeah.
Party Down probably would beat Friends, yes. I think. So yeah. I take solace in that.
Yep.
Well, you know, March is coming. March Madness.
It's true.
And so,
That's true. Yeah.
I guess March is always
year.
Coming. It's half
yeah.
a year.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's always.
In fact, in its name, it's coming
unless
it's
you're,
marching.
Yep. Unless you're in March, it's always coming.
Okay.
Next March is always coming. Yeah.
There you go.
Coming. Okay, well, we sort of did it, but just to make it official, Party Down does not beat Friends, so Friends, the ones with the embryos, will stay on top for now. Any last thoughts on this episode?
I wish that it had continued the whole... No, it's just the episode, sorry. Nothing. Oh, my God. Mm. I would never want to live in Steve Guttenberg's house. That's it.
I just specific to the probably the four of us, but I watched the next episode or two, like, I just because I was enjoying it so much. This show appeared at a time where, like, I started to know improvisers who were making it,
Oh, my gosh.
And it was really fun to just watch and be like, oh, my gosh, Sarah Burns is in this episode. Like, I have a feeling I'm going to see a lot of that. Rob Hubel was also in that episode. That's just a nice little bonus to add. But, yeah, I was like, that's like a fun little game to play for me.
The only other thing I'll add is I really enjoyed the character of the date that Ryan Hansen brings.
Yeah, she did a great robot. Her robot reading was so good.
So good, but also they did the thing where she has more in common with the nerdy character. And
yes.
She's like, no, I'm going to bang Steve Guttenberg.
Right.
And
yes.
Ironically or coincidentally or whatever the term is, I mean, I don't know who this actress is. You know, she is the actress that we're that they all are. This is her
she
one
is us.
Part. And, no, but like this is a show about actors who come close and may not always make it. And I feel like I'll look her up. I don't know her name. I don't know.
Maybe.
What else maybe. Yeah.
You got a lot to do.
I've got stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Dan. What's next?
The next episode that we're going to do is going to be an episode of 30 Rock called Rosemary's Baby.
Ooh,
that's the Carrie Fisher episode.
Oh, that's a good one.
No.
That'll be the next thing that we watch.
Just as a little.
Oh, and I'm sorry, Stan.
Yeah, that's fine.
My brain, it's on Hulu. So if you're looking for 30 Rock, it's on Hulu and you can watch it.
It might also still be on Netflix. I have a feeling 30 Rock's also on Netflix. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I am the youngest of four and my mom is Rosemary. Therefore, I am Rosemary's baby.
What?
Oh, yeah. So there we go.
Anyway, you guys, thank you so much for getting, Michelle, thank you so much for getting through this episode of another FN podcast about sitcoms. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Michelle Lykowski.
I am Rosemary's baby.
I am Stan. Luke Ward.
I saw the wheel spinning as you were trying to.
My name's Damien.
Wrong movie, but okay.
That was I thought we were all going to be like Satan's kid.
Right, right.
I'm sorry.
Yes, and.
Don't do this. No, you won't come back.
Yeah. This is why I didn't make it as an improviser. Still never got yes and correctly. Yeah. I'm Dan, the producer.
Bye.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
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 This has been another effing podcast about sitcoms. The music for our theme song is by Ryan Satoy, and the lyrics and vocals are by our own Michelle Lykowski. Our logo was created by Luke Ward. Follow us on Instagram, and if you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, well, we'd certainly appreciate it. Another effing podcast about sitcoms will return in this time slot next week.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.